Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Podcast, your place to dive deep into the complex world of search engine optimization, bringing you insight, anecdotes, and real-life application from experts in the SEO industry. And here's your host, Jeremy Rivera.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, and this is the Unscripted SEO Podcast, where I'll be interviewing all kinds of SEOs over time. Today I have Ray Martinez, and we're going to learn a little bit more about him, what his specialties are, his industries and experience. So what would you say is the main thing you're working on right now, Ray?
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on. Main thing I work on now is in the higher ed space. So, you know, I work for Archer Education. I'm VP of SEO. I run a team of SEOs. We specifically focus in enrollment marketing. So our job is not just to drive leads, but to actually generate leads that turn into enrolled students. Mm-hmm. So a little bit more nuanced, a little bit more of a longer sales cycle in terms of the product. My personal specialty in SEO, where I cut my chops, was technical SEO. That was something that really connected with me very early on. I was actually taught by a guy named Richie Lardston, who was based in San Diego last time I checked. But he showed me from the ground up probably about, like, I want to say a decade ago now, where, you know, because I'd started 4 years before, but I'd only learned like the worst practices. And so I had this really great teacher come in and, you know, set the foundation. Him and this guy, Andy Kelly, you'll find him on Twitter, Sanjuro. They both sat me down and really gave me a framework of understanding technical SEO, which took it from being, you know, I want to say in the 2014 times where people were doing that checklist approach and everything was very much checklist scorecard, but taking it a step further and saying, here's what you actually need to do to implement these things.
Yeah. SEO, like, you can talk a good game all the time, you know, look at your analytics every morning, look at the numbers in Search Console and be like, why isn't it changing? Why am I not getting more clicks and impressions? And like, you got to do something. You got to have a ground game. I think I've used the metaphor of using like Tai Chi. It's like small, silly looking repetitive movements that over time have a cumulative impact.
Yeah, I mean, and I could talk about the seriousness of like technical SEO. Everyone thinks about it like, oh, it's kind of this black box. But no, like, when you really think about the nature of what it is and being able to crawl pages, it's so important. I have an example, and I'm not going to say this university's name, but there was a university out there. They hired a team to do a web migration. This team did not think about SEO at all. And what ended up happening was they built the custom 404 page. Mm-hmm. But the custom 404 page had all 404 links pointing to broken subfolders. So it was basically doing that repetitive path subfolder issue where, you know, if you use relative linking, you're gonna create a repetitive path over and over and over again. So this sat live on the site for 3 years. In that time frame, they saw about a 60% reduction in organic traffic to the university. And, you know, in particular, right now, you know, universities across the United States are at a very interesting place and time because there's what's called the enrollment cliff, where it's projected that enrollments and students actually interested in education will drop off. Mm. So, you know, smaller schools that lose that sort of revenue, lose that sort of traffic, simply can't sustain that loss of revenue.
Yeah, no, I've worked with a couple of different universities. You know, one was just subcontracting for a site designer. And, you know, in the process, we realized that somebody had hacked one of their marketing departments and then discovered that somebody else was running an exploit because their search was producing permanent URLs on their EDU. So they were spamming the search with, porn and pills URLs.
That's not surprising at all. I've done a lot of research on that, and some of these things are really like what they're used for, and some of the products are super dangerous. There was the Harvard CBD gummy story, which was kind of broadcast and pushed out live, where Harvard was basically exploited because one of their students, I guess, was phished. And, you know, with these platforms, a lot of these university platforms allow students to build either a subdomain or a subfolder in like a multi-site WordPress build. So all I need is access, right? Yeah. And then I'm going to install my plugin that's cracked, or I can do whatever I want to. And if universities don't set proper guardrails, yeah, those exploits are insane. Like, I've run crawls, found a lot of stuff out there in the wild. I think that's Black Hat SEO, though. I think, you know, they're going to get in where they fit in. And, you know, these are some of the most attractive domains because, and I'm going to say a hot take, I don't think Google will ever give a .edu a manual action.
It's bold. I cannot disagree with you, though. I think we've seen, you know, there's only been a handful of manual actions on very big ticket, big brand entities. Then those were, you know, public beatdowns meant to cause fear and loathing. I agree. I cannot see them, you know, slapping down Stanford or in any big university.
The thing that Google fears most, which, you know, it's very timely, is regulation. Mm. And so they spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in lobbying a year to make sure that the government is never in their business. So, you know, to regulate a university and to put manual action against a university and de-index them,
yeah,
would raise an ire of suspicion. So I think, you know, a lot of black hats know this. Like, you can go on Fiverr right now and buy .edu link injections. And I've tested them and I've purchased them, tested them, and they've indexed and passed PageRank. How do I know? Because they're in Search Console.
Yeah. There's few things that do show up in Search Console, but like
when they do, that's an important indicator. And sometimes you get crap in there and some large sites. But I like to look at, you know, my best indicator if Google's actually looking at and saying, is this link worth anything?
Yeah.
Is it showing up and reporting in Search Console?
That's an excellent note, and everybody should jot that down. I'm definitely going to make a note of that in the show notes.
Because it's also compounded. It's not just Google, right? Like, when it shows up in Search Console, that means it was crawled and indexed, right? So also, we have to think about the nature of the sites that we're pushing these links on. Like, a .edu site, some of them will work. And the way they do this, which was fascinating to me, is because it's, you know, you're talking about a URL that's probably 10 levels deep at the forum level, which is where they're hosting. So I was wondering, I'm like, how do they get this indexed? And so they're buying expired domains with actual equity in there. You know, I found one that was like a political site that was expired, like a campaign site that had expired, had Wikipedia links pointing to it. And, you know, now it's hosting a bunch of, you know, explicit nefarious content.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that when there is enough money, then some of these systems have surprising like upfront costs. I ran into a case where we couldn't figure out why all of these referring domains kept showing up, and it was like four or five different versions of a WordPress template with the same scraped content, but different domains every single month. 30 domains were being bought every single month with different templates, the same, you know, like three batches of scraped content would get pushed onto it, and they just sludged everybody except for one person heavily with these hot links, junk anchor texts, and we kept getting dragged down. So that's why I have a complicated relationship when, you know, John Mu comes on and says, oh, the disavow, you don't have to worry about the disavow, because I've experienced a time where, you know what, this is all junk. I didn't do it. It's bad anchor text all over the place. I disavowed it, and I saw a positive. We got more. I disavowed it again. I got a positive result. We got more.
I think disavows is a danger. It's a dangerous tool. But when it's used properly and it's used with
like a
with
scalp.
Thought and consideration, it's your, like, I, you know, when I was launching like my little sandbox site, like smallbusinessseohelp.com, and I go on there and I was playing with different types of content, how different qualities of content. And one of the things that happened, I actually lost my whole train of thought there. Sorry about that. could you go back to your comment? What was your thought there?
Disavow.
Disavow. So with smallbusinessseohelp.com, what happened was, overnight, I just see my site tank, like impressions, clicks, just drop to zero. And I'm like, what the hell? And I don't have a manual action.
Yeah.
But indexed in Search Console was a bunch of porn links with explicit anchor text. And not just a few, like somebody hit me with about 20,000 referring domains of porn.
Wow.
All .xyz domains and all sorts of spam. And this about cleared it up in within a week, 2 weeks.
Yeah, it is a scalpel. And I hope that, you know, we get to keep that tool in our arsenal because, you know, I was happy when Penguin changed from the god of wrath and destruction on everything to a more polite god that would sometimes disavow things in the quiet, in the background. And you're never quite sure what's happening there. I think it's the mystery is good for spammers in certain ways, but it's also like, you know, since there isn't that wrath and vengeance that a lot of people feel like they can get away with it, or that they're, you know, I don't have to worry about it, you know, but there are other signals, like even if the link is quote unquote devalued in terms of positive, that doesn't mean that there aren't other signals that can't become problematic. Anchor text certainly comes to mind.
Anchor text is one of the biggest indicators of relevancy.
I totally agree. 100%.
If you don't have exact match anchor text, if you don't have a significant ratio of that, if you don't have a ratio of branded anchor text, if you don't, I think if you don't have it, like where people are fearful with link building is like, oh, I bought links and it's going to look spammy. Google's going to give me a manual action. But if you're doing the right sort of link building, you're going to earn that anchor text naturally, but you're also going to earn, you know, naked anchors. You're going to earn, you know,
unbranded,
some generic, and you need that balance. Yeah. But the relevancy comes from that exact match.
Yes.
That exact match, as well as, you know, phrase match variants of your keys. Yeah.
It's also about like the size of the pie. You know, I was talking to a client about this of like, you can get, you can go and I can help you get 100 branded anchor text links right now. But however much search you get in branded is however much search. So you can't rank more number one than you have. You just got 10 branded anchor text links. That's good. But if those were unbranded, if those were topical, if those were deep links, if those were to service pages specific to those services, that would open up new markets to you. So thinking about, you know, your link building, you know, getting those opportunities to talk to a specific thing and getting anchor text, not just like it is important to get branded because there is like a, you know, a tide lifts all boats aspect to a certain degree. But without specific anchors, I've seen so many link profiles where it's, you know, either branded or nothing, and that they just rank for branded or nothing.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it's that bottom piece of the funnel right there. It's like, we know that we have, you know, branded traffic captured, or at least we should have branded traffic captured for high conversion. So it's that expansion past it. And I think that's where I got to shout out like Austin Anderson. I got to shout out Ivan Villalba. Those guys are on that's my off page team. And the way they think about off page, the way they think about link building, the sites that they reach out to, everything is done with thought and consideration, because it's like, what's the purpose of a link? The purpose of a link is for me to drive traffic. So it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, page rank matters, but like if it's a publication I can't drive traffic from,
then it's the wrong.
Does that really matter?
Like, yeah. And it's not just any traffic too. Cause like I had a client in a space and the rehab space, and they put up a post and it went off the rails in February. Like 1,000% traffic change for their detox page. Sounds good, right? Or for their detox blog post. But it was a liver detox post. Mm-hmm. And so liver detox queries, they showed up on all of these people also ask for health, for people that were doing diet pills. And so they showed up and got all of these impressions for like grapeseed oil, for all kinds of like natural herbs and supplements that people are taking to detox their liver and want to know what the impact is on their liver. But they're a rehab and they were tired. They were actually happy when that crashed. They're like, oh man, I don't have to talk to another health weight loss person about their liver. I can talk to people who I can help, you know, with this detox problem, you know? So, just because you can get traffic, doesn't mean it's always the right traffic.
Exactly.
And so like getting those links too, thinking about where it can get published, you know, showing up as a guest on a blog, or showing up as a guest on a podcast. You know, if I show up and I'm selling SEO and I'm on the Icelandic Fisherman podcast, there's not too many Icelandic fishermen who are actually going to contact me to do business with me. So there's like the cynical game of, oh, well, you know, when you podcast, there's all sorts of distribution, all these third party sites and opportunity. But you also got to align it with reality, you know.
But you know what? Like, it's funny because it's like, it's yes, it's that. But then there's also like, you'll get like avenues and pockets where you may not even discover it. And that's like, that's the mix right there. It's like you also have to be willing to experiment and expand a little bit.
Sure.
Without like, because it's like, I don't want to just capture what's known.
Right.
Because I'm a big subscriber in like Blue Ocean Theory, you know, the Harvard Business Review article talking about we're looking for blue oceans. And, you know, a red ocean means that it's cannibalized market. We have high competition. And a blue ocean, that's the places where there's low competition, where there's places for us to feed, you know, places for us to grow and expand. And I think, so I always... In my mind, it's like, it's a struggle, right? Like, it's like, I know this is where I need to be. I need to be here. But there may be some interest over here that I can pull in. And you know, when, like, luckily for me, like, I have, you know, beyond that off-page team, I also have a digital PR team, you know, shout out to George Bradley and team. It allows us a nice mix in coverage. Because they're getting, you know, the high authority, you know, getting a faculty member in the Hill or getting a faculty member, you know, in the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post and, you know, talking about their research. And then we're covering it, you know, with our content and we're earning links from relevant and it just makes a wonderful spread that I think, you know, resonates, allows us to, you know, train, you know, we've been trying to train Google on brand on, you know, entity connection for years now.
Yeah.
Like in you know, Archer in the higher ed space, this is something, you know, the digital PR strategy was something I created. It's something I inherited and it was gifted to me. and really was such a powerful gift. You know, these two guys, you know, Clayton Dean, Robert Lee, really, you know, they've founded an agency called Circa. I worked there and they were actually purchased by Archer and that's how I came under the Archer fold. But they had started with digital PR very early on. You're talking about, you know, 10, 11 years ago. So this is, you know, it's a deep baked process. And like my background, I worked in traditional PR and I've never seen the digital PR approach that we take. I haven't seen other people take this approach, the way that we do it, the care, the consideration. I would probably say the closest to it is Carrie Rose. At Rise at 7 with the way, you know, I've had conversations where we've talked about just her team's care and, you know, but like George and team are, you know, the relationships they build. And then not only that, the relationships they build with the faculty members, not just the publications, because it allows us to dig out such great insights and really push our universities and say, hey, here's your unique value proposition. Here's what makes your bachelor's in accounting different than this person's bachelor's in accounting.
I think, you know, I was talking to my wife last night that human conversations experience is becoming more valuable and more commoditized. And, you know, with ChatGPT coming in and faking things, you know, Claude's and Monet's, like, all of these systems are coming in and they sound like humans. You know, it's someone used the analogy of, you know, you create a machine that barks like a dog and then you pretend that it is a dog and you forget that it's not. Like, it's nonsense. It sounds like a dog, but it doesn't actually communicate things. So I think, you know, with humans, we kind of undervalue human that conversation and the sharing of experience. And there's ways, you know, that you can get as an SEO kind of, you know, plugged into a mindset of, oh, I need to create content. And, you know, it's really easy to open that door. Like, oh, I can do it 10 times faster. I can create 10 times as much content. Well, yes, there's 10 times as many words. But is there 10 times as much value that you're creating?
Exactly. My question always is, are we adding value?
Yeah, a copy of a copy of a copy.
Why does this matter to this person? Why would they want this? Are we asking those? And I think a lot of people don't want to ask those questions because we get so caught up in the online and get so disconnected. Mm-hmm. And I think you see it in how brands market, right? Like, the real world activity, something you'll hear across higher ed, which it drives me insane, is folks will say, we have ghost applications. Students will say they've never interacted with any of our advertising. And I'm going to say, no, they just didn't know that they interacted with your advertising. Mm-hmm. They were served a passive impression that planted that. Unless I am a legacy student, two generations deep, going to a school, three generations deep or whatever it is, where did I get that program from? I didn't just pull it out of my mind.
No, there was a seed planted somewhere.
There's awareness. It could have been from a college professor, and that college professor saw my ad, right? Thinking about the ways these things translate to real world experience. And I think a lot of people miss that. They don't understand that, like, hey, if I see a display ad somewhere, someone's going to come back to my site if they didn't convert right away.
Yeah,
I have data that shows that. Like, when my paid team ramps up a brand a spend on brand, right? We see a direct correlation. If they spend too much, they actually suppress brand search. But if they spend just the right amount, we see a lift in brand search.
I think Rand Fishkin just did a short snippet on SparkToro talking about the change in attribution in digital marketing, in that as we see, you know, they become these walled gardens. It doesn't mean that there isn't fruit and vegetable growing in those gardens. It's just there are no links. You know, we can't attribute that click, and that drives drives my SEO brain kind of crazy of looking at these stats and thinking, how can I get, you know, clicks? Can I follow that person and, you know, show them that what I did here has this? So it's kind of a step back because, in TikTok, you view and you swipe, or you just view and it just, you know, my wife's on her phone and looking at things and it goes to the next thing and it goes to the next thing. There's no pause.
But this isn't new, though. Like, if we really think about it, right, like the walled gardens, right, I think that's one problem. Like, you look at a Discord, you look at a TikTok, they're their own thing. And we're missing forum content. But I also think, like, that sort of brand, right, like that's the Wall Street Journal that gives no one a link, right? Like, yes. That's justifying the value of what's this branded mention. And I think a non-link brand mention, and I think, you know, Rand's been at the forefront of that for
a long time.
Yeah, a decade plus, you know, really understanding that, hey, just because I don't pass PageRank doesn't mean it doesn't have value.
Yes.
Like, when I first started working with Archer, 2019, we had Harvard Extension School's public leadership credential. And the public leadership credential didn't have any volume at all. Like, it was a term that we helped them create, right? There was no search volume. And literally, the only campaign was, you know, George Bradley and team going out there and doing digital PR. And they did digital PR. And then within 2 months, you're starting to see volume for this credential name that had no. So that stuff matters. It's the thing that's going to generate conversation. That's at least going to get people, you know, going. Like on the side, outside of higher ed, I did like, there's a smaller client that I worked on, Soul Squeeze. They're a margarita company. They do organic margaritas. Mm-hmm. And we did old school press release to announce the fact that they launched this organic margarita line. And we just did distribution regionally to news stations. We did distribution to organic food sites and guess what? Within launch, they had, you know, 150 links.
Yeah.
Indexed in Search Console. That's Search Console. That's not even counting what Ahrefs or SEMrush found. That's just Search Console.
I think there's a few SEOs that are stuck in their guest post mindset. Like, hey, I got to do bulk outreach and do this and forget that there are other ways to communicate with the world outside the internet, and that things outside the internet impact what's contained 100%. On it. It's a reflection of, it's not individual from, they're, you know, symbiotic good and bad ways. Like, there's bad things that happen in the world and they reflect on the internet, and bad things on the internet that start to reflect in the real world.
Yeah, I have a fun example for this too. So years ago, I worked on LSU Online. So I, you know, helped, you know, create the framework that built that site up, did all the redirection to really make it a powerhouse. But that site was fun because I was working on it during the national championship run for LSU football. Mm. And on game day, that's what we had this conversation on Twitter. You'd have that million spike in like impressions, and then like, you know, an extra 100K in clicks on game day, and then it would just drop back down. So everything looked like, reporting looked so wild. Everything was like an anomaly because it was just such a large spike. But I, you know, and I would ask them, what are you guys doing to drive that traffic besides just brand mentions of LSU? And they're like, well, we have a banner that shows in the end zone that just says online.lsu.edu.
That's
here, like, I am. You can't compete with, like, that's real world tangible stuff. That's just like, who's accounting for that?
Right. I mean, hopefully you can claim credit for it, but
it was so definitive that there was no.
Yeah.
There's no, like, you know, and with that engagement, it was a simple SEO engagement. I think when we now, like, when the way kind of Archer approaches it from a cross channel standpoint, it's like most of my conversations I have, I'm like, when I'm talking strategy, I'm talking with, you know, the VP of paid, I'm talking with the VP of creative, I'm talking with the VP of content, and we're all saying, what are we going to do from a strategy standpoint? And we're going to put all of our notes together and brainstorm this out. Because we understand that the cross channel is what's going to be that saves us. Like, great, SEO ranked really well, but it didn't convert, and so our paid cost per acquisition was three times what it's supposed to be. That's not a great story to tell.
Yeah, you know, it's about thinking, you know, not getting siloed as an SEO and shunted to the side, being an afterthought means proactively trying to work with and find opportunities to take it to that next step. You know, a couple of big successes I've had is actually, you know, working with the customer support team on a SaaS and realizing what are the questions that you keep answering that, you know, the friction that exists, like either with the product or like with information about the product. Like, oh, we wish that people knew that this did this. Everybody keeps asking, does it do this? And we're like, yes, it does this. And so it was a two-part prong of like, okay, well, let's actually add that in the app as one of the top things that we do. This was for Raven Tools. And then we'll also like add that content, create a blog post, update the help text section to focus on that thing. And that had, you know, multiple, you know, blow by effects. There were so many fewer tickets asking to do we do that, and also so much more traffic or for the end service that that was connected to, and it also reduced churn and increased the number of people that converted from paid trial. So, you know, like talking, you know, multidiscipline and not, you know, siloing yourself. So that means talking to your business owner for a second and a third time, get him on an interview, you know, somewhere and listen to what he's saying and make sure that your content reflects that, you know, make sure that what they're passionate about, like if they're explaining and talking to somebody, it's hard being in an SEO. I really recommend trying to get your end client of a small business to do an interview, because in that third party situation, their sales mode clicks on. There's a the reason they have passion and it's driven, and you can kind of see, oh, I totally didn't talk about that service, or didn't talk about how the pride and, you know, how we built this boutique business from the ground up, focusing on, you know, hard work principles or this. You know, there's something in that story to pull out. Like, again, back to the human value aspect, the human story angle.
100%. You know, I was recently on a Search Engine Journal and Wix panel. I talked about this a little bit, but like, so I'm privileged. I have an admissions team that, you know, sometimes, you know, Archer will do admissions. Sometimes we have partners, but we have the benefit of getting direct feedback from sales team.
Yeah.
We can overcome sales objections before they even become objections. Right? Like that's such a powerful thing. And I think a lot of people overlook it, but like, you know, I've worked in sales. I sold cars. I had to look somebody in their face and say, give me $10,000 because your credit sucks.
Right.
Right. Like that is such an uncomfortable thing, but it allows you to handle objections, right? Like a lot of how I look at, an objection versus a complaint. Like if somebody's saying something three times, if I get three users that have the same objection, that's a complaint to me. Mm. That's something that needs to be addressed. And that's something, from a sales standpoint, like he's a little batshit, but Grant Cardone, I don't know if you're familiar with Grant Cardone. He's a sales guy. He's a little out there. He's a little kooky. But he has this program called The Road to the Sale, and it'll break down a sales actual, the scientific steps to a sale. Like it's the greet. It's I then find common ground. I then start my demo. And then after my demo, I ask a scaling question. And then after my demo, I shut up and I start negotiating. It's all a step down. But when you're able to understand a sale at that level, it really helps you understand the psychology, and that translates really well to the marketing.
Right. Because if you can overcome the objection before they even go into the meeting, then that's one less roadblock to that.
100%. And you think of it like this, you're improving the conversion rate without even fully like engaging with your client.
Yeah, I've described it as a friction. Yep. You know, like
if everything, that's a perfect
example. You're on a gravel path and you're sliding something, there's pushback constantly. It's the same grade, same slope, same objective. But if you can smooth that out, get a smoother surface, take some rocks out of the way, you know, with content on your site, with article, with, you know, some keyword research, figuring out what are those people, things people also ask. They're asking those things because they don't know. You should say, you know, get those out of it. It doesn't fit for everybody. And they're, you know, it's hard to overcome some of the photographer syndrome of like, I can put a picture and it will explain everything. Kind of mentality. Like you gotta say things on your site. Like the internet exists mostly in words. There's value in pictures and there's value in audio, but audio is just a different way of presenting written content. So a picture can say 1,000 words, but not the same words to everybody. So right. There's so many like commercial photographers, luxury owners, spas and salons are particularly guilty of, oh, I just want pretty pictures of my salon because it'll speak so much to the
people. It's any business that is looking to build in Squarespace first always worries me, because it's like, okay, then are we only focused on the aesthetic?
Right.
And Yeah, I always get nervous with that stuff. It's like, because I'm like, yeah, it's luxury, but like, you also want to give context. Like, I get minimalism, but like, yeah, you're leaving up open, you know, a lot open for interpretation, which it's like, let's be direct. Let's like, a good website, what's it do? It directs somebody to take an action that we want them to take.
Right. And some actions, you know, it's kind of crazy because there's a kind of an inverse of like, you know, the more expensive the service, the less, the more pictures and the less text they want to say. You're like, you're asking more for out of less, and hoping that you're saying the right thing.
Look, if I'm remodeling my bathroom and I'm buying Italian marble,
yeah,
and I'm going on a site and I'm buying this expensive piece, like sheet of marble, I want to know where it comes from. I want to know why it's worth this.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know all those things that what makes it luxury?
Yeah.
Definitely. Right. Like, and I think perhaps that's the difference where, you know, cause for some brands, it's like, they don't have to, they don't like, if I'm Louis Vuitton, I don't necessarily know if I have to say why this is luxury.
That's true. But the majority of clients are not Louis Vuitton.
Like exactly. And that's the difference. It's like, that's where brand, right? Like brand can help you there, but like, if you're not that brand, like I had buddies, you know, these guys are clothing designers from Puerto Rico, Details Matter, great clothing brand, but you know, what can I do? I'm going to have them rank for red shirt. Everything is brand. So I gave them a template for their brand. I said, hey, what you guys want to do is hop on podcasts and mention your brand. Talk about your brand. Anytime somebody writes you up, link it back to your site. And you see these guys and all the traffic they're doing and they're generating is just brand building. And I think, you know, it just depends on the individual business.
Sure.
Because, you know, I worked on Amplify Pictures, which is a movie studio in California. Like, you know, Joe Lewis, who's the executive producer and owner and founder of that, all he wanted to do was rank for his name, because there was another one in the UK, but he, you know, these guys did like 100 Foot Wave with HBO. So he's like, I want to make sure that people know I did the 100 Foot Wave and I want to rank for my brand. And simple, you know, so I think, you know, with some of that stuff, like some of those higher end tier clients, it's very simple brand building. But when you get into the smaller, more nuanced goods and services that you're trying to, that are more expensive.
Yeah.
You better have a lot of touch points and a lot of justification and a lot of value building.
Absolutely. So just wrapping up, if you have any one piece of advice, action item, actionable, like do it today, what would that be for the person that's listening?
I think it's just keep learning technology, right? Like what will make you understand how search engines, how anything works is understanding the stack, right? Like understanding how it operates at the base level. How is content pulled together? How is it served? How do people interact with it? You know, have that sort of curious mindset for whatever's going forward, because we're at a very interesting time where we don't know what the future of search is. We don't, we simply don't. And so, you know, my best, you know, piece of advice is to stay curious. Keep learning. And then I wanted to do one thing. I wanted to shout out some more team members, if that's okay. I want to shout out Nikki Sandberg. I want to shout out Sean Taylor. I want to shout out Tyler Putz, Steven Spaulding, all of my team members who are great. Everyone, you know, all my editors, Michael Longo and Law, Charlotte. Oh my God. I can go on and on about my wonderful team. I am blessed, and everything I am is because of them and because they arm me with the weapons to go out there and do damage every day. So shout out to them, and thank you for all their hard work. And thank you, Jeremy, for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can people find you? Are you on social? Are you mostly on LinkedIn? Or
so you can find me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn is Raymond Martinez SEO. That's slug, all dashes in between there. You can find me on Ray Martinez SEO on X.com. And then on Threads, Ray_MRTNZ. That is me. I'm tepidly stepping into that platform. So
a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him. All right. Thanks so much for your time, Ray. Thanks.
Hey, Jared, thank you for having me on.